Okay, so we're talking about cheating.
Yay.
When people are like, that's not fair. Which...
How about spouses?
That's what we have polyamory for.
Right. Not cheating, it's changing the rules.
So, there was a video recently on TED of, I think her name is Amy Mills or something like that. She has the prosthetic lower legs.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think she was the one or one of the people who started the debates about in the Olympics, who's in Special Olympics, who's in the actual in Bunny Ears Olympics, and if the prosthetic limbs get better, then, you know, like, is the person better, or is it because of the legs and all this other stuff? And she also has these legs that make her, she calls them her Barbie legs, and make her 6 inches taller than she actually is. And one of her friends was like, but that's cheating! She needs to be taller. And I think that among this group, it's a little bit different to talk about this, because we're a little bit more open to the idea of enhancing yourself. But I want to kind of talk about the social stigmas that are attached to it, and why people might feel that way, and how we can make it more acceptable, stuff like that. I'm also open to whatever. Pretty laid back today. Anybody?
How are the Barbie legs cheating? She's taller.
I think that the point was that she can be any, like, 5 inches taller at any point that she wants to be, like, and then, and her friend was pointing out that, oh, that's not fair to the other women. It's kind of what she was saying, but, which is silly.
Yeah. But it also gives you an advantage in that, hello, I'm Willow.
I'm Indigo.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too.
It also gives you the advantage in that height is considered as an attraction thing, it's considered a power thing. It's not just you're 5 inches taller,
it's
all
there's,
of
there, yeah, there's a lot of different things. Yeah. Do it.
All the things are. So
I think the concept itself of cheating implies that there is some type of a level playing field, which I think is really present itself. The idea that even your background, your upbringing, those things, then launch you into some type of a blank slate that you're allowed to have an even playing field from, that interferes with the idea of achieving overall. I don't know, I still run into it a lot. I'm dyslexic, so I use a computer for everything. Some of my colleagues at law school really hate this because they see the fact that I have a computer and I get time for editing grammar and stuff as a disadvantage or as cheating. I think that's a problem with the evaluation system. The evaluation system is based on not figuring out what people know or what people are able to know, but on testing in a certain way.
I think, like, what fairness is not equity. Like, fairness is not having the same stuff. Like, fairness is, for somebody, I feel like for somebody to be cheating, there has to be an agreement made between the parties involved somewhere, and then that agreement is not honored by one of those parties, and then it becomes cheating. Otherwise, it's, you know, an advantage or something. Whether or not, you know, whether or not you have that advantage for, like, moral or amoral or ethical or whatever reasons is different, but I think cheating is used in contexts in which, like, it doesn't really apply when no agreements have been made about, like, what are the rules, and if there's no rules, you can't cheat.
Do you think that there might be tacit agreements?
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's all kinds of, I mean, I live in an urban setting, like, to live in society, there's a bajillion of those. And that's how a lot of fights get started, is when people, that's how, like, cheating in relationships comes up, and, like, I didn't know that was cheating. That was an agreement. Well, I assumed it was. We can assume that. No. You know, it's analogous to other things as well.
Mm-hmm.
kind of lay out your agreements.
And I think in the arena of sports, it has a very clear but also sort of ironic definition.
Mm-hmm.
So, going back to the idea of a level playing field, I mean, it's something that's to some level maintained in sports. The reason of perpetuating sport, but the whole idea of sport is already there. So, you're constantly trying to have an advantage over the other people, but you have to do it within a certain, you know, constraint. Because if you get too far, you know, then it's not competitive anymore. Once you lose the competition, once you have so much of an advantage that it's not competitive anymore, the sport stops being fun for people.
Arms race instead of a competition.
Yeah. Well, if like let's say you had somebody who, let's take boxing as an arbitrary example, and somebody who just could knock out everybody who came to the ring. Eventually, nobody's going to want to fight this guy because there might be a couple of people who wanted to beat the guy that took out the guy who knocks everybody out. But I think that has a lot to do with, the whole idea of sport is, or any game, really, is that you have to have some sort of objective criterion for measuring the success of the game. And then from that, you get all of these other rules.
And
sometimes those rules usually dictate how people can play the game.
Yeah. And to tie those together, in sports, it's very explicit rules. Was I think part of what you were talking about is when rules aren't necessarily explicit, but they're we assume that they're in place.
Yeah, but I mean, sometimes you can cheat in a somebody will get their gold medal stripped off because they're taking human growth hormone, but that wasn't explicitly illegal yet, but it violates the spirit of the game or whatever. And so there are these there's an infinite number of retroactively tacit assumptions about things that can make cheating happen.
And then what about people who, due to their genetics, I think that, what's his name?
Lance Armstrong?
He has abnormally large lungs or a heart or something.
Really thick blood.
Yeah, so he's at an advantage for something he was born with, and so we allow that. Whereas if you were to take a drug which would do the same thing, thank you, you would be disqualified.
At some point, we'll have the genetically modified Olympics and the organic.
The all-mod Olympics. I've been pushing the all-mod Olympics for so long. It was glorious.
I think that would be interesting to see what people could do, and I think that would also be good PR, just to...
So many people would die. So bloody.
Yeah. But then we would also learn from them. It's kind of like animal testing, but it's, voluntary.
Yeah, totally.
It's terrible, I'm sorry.
Unlike animals, people can consent.
Yeah.
Exactly. So, what do you think it's going to take to make it okay to modify yourself blatantly?
Generation grows up with it.
I think there just needs to be more tolerance for variety.
The generation that is growing up with it right now, as far as pharmaceuticals and stuff are concerned,
I don't think there'll be one thing, right? It's historians would look back at and be that is the moment.
I'm sure they'll come up with something, because that's how history works.
Well,
it does.
Retrospectively and without real meaning.
That's how we roll.
There are a lot of little things. I mean, just stuff like the reversing the stem cell research stuff and things like that. And people like you talking about at the beginning of this, advocating reasons for the introduction of people with, I guess, Sorry, getting into completely blocked by that song.
Yeah.
Those are called ear queens. They work their way in.
Yeah, I wasn't expecting stories. But. Anyway. Yeah. So people, you know, people with disadvantages, so-called disadvantages, finding ways to get up to the so-called level playing field. And then other people saying, well, hey, why can't you do that? Somebody will argue, well, you're already there. But
one interesting thing that kind of like is along that thing, but kind of overshoots it is your, there's like a TED talk about that girl that has no legs, who's like the paralytic. Okay, yeah. And then like them people talking about, well, you know, you can't qualify for world running speed because you've got fucking crazy bionic kangaroo legs. That's not cool. And she's like, well, fuck, I have no legs though. So you give me the title.
Yeah.
So that's like a thing where you're tapping into these things just to like level the playing field, but you can overshoot it just as easily.
Yeah.
And then, you know, are you only allowed to, like, let's say there is like a pharmaceutical that helped you with your like memory or general intelligence or whatever, or something like that, and you were born with Down syndrome, and then people are like, well, they should be able to take this drug. It's not their fault, you know. They should be able to like be cured of Down syndrome, but then that makes them, you know, super genius or super memory or whatever. Then is it unfair again now because they've like overshot the norm?
There was one of the Clay Shirky things I was reading. He was saying that the technology doesn't level the playing field. It just makes it possible to kind of magnify it or to make use of those differences between people. And I'm also reminded of in the first time I ever went to a presentation on genetic gene therapy. I was probably 13 or something, most of it went over my head, but they were talking about the same things that our research for therapy end up being the things that advance us. I think I've talked about it a little bit before, with the thicker blood thing, you can take a drug that is made for people with anemia so that they can actually be okay most of the time, and if they get a paper cut, they won't bleed out. But then it makes you a better athlete because you're able to have more oxygen in your blood. So I wonder about things becoming a norm, though, or in some business situations, it's now expected that you take some enhancements because otherwise you can't keep up with everyone else. You don't have a chance. And so it's kind of assumed that you're taking drugs of some kind. So I think it's kind of filtering into the society as we have now.
Mm-hmm. The fairness is completely, you've got your like, I forget which words in English, but you've got like ethics and morals, which are kind of the standalone things that are supposedly like kind of inalienable. And then you've got like fairness, and these are all like social constructions over here that there's some kind of hazy consensus. And everybody's like, okay, well, here's about where okay is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is okay and this is not, and that changes over time, but it's just about, I guess it's just becoming ubiquitous enough in the culture such that everybody's like, well, I guess, like, I can get it now, so it's okay with me now. And then once most of the people have access to it, and they're like, it's not that unfair if I can get it, too, for me. So, and eventually it becomes okay then if you get past some consensus of, you know, people tend to get pissed off about unfairness a lot more when they're on the bad side of it, you know? And when most people are on the good side of it in some community or culture,
there's another, okay. What you just said reminded me of another aspect or level of this, which is access to those things which give us advantages. You know, very often, well, just like talking about medications and stuff, for example, you know, you have to have a certain amount of money or something in order to acquire those usually. Or you can get them some other way, but I think that one of the things that maybe people at least hope is factored into fairness is the idea that people who have an advantage such as wealth or status can't use that to get further advantage over people who don't.
I think that those ones are somewhat cultural, though. I was talking to a programmer here working on some MMORPG stuff on an international basis, and he was talking about a large conflict that he had with their Korean counterparts who wanted to put directly in the EULA that it was fine to loan your character out to someone who would play it during the day for you and basically farm materials and levels for you because it was culturally acceptable and a widespread practice there. So I think the standards of what is okay or what is acceptable for cheating are definitely cultural based. It's not just access.
And subcultural based. And within an organization, you'll have some kind of something within our case is fair or unfair. But yeah, I think that, I talk to people, I have friends that live in China or from Mexico and stuff, and I'm always like, they're always throwing up stuff at me that just totally blows away my assumptions about about how we operate.
Something that's really interesting to me is the construct that underlies all this talk about fairness and cheating, because what's this value that we have that makes us attenuated to what fairness is? I bring this up because I read an article by George Dvorsky, I don't know if your name's familiar, about Michael Phelps and saying that he's already transhuman, and that because he has all these physical advantages, like he has a larger arm span and he has way bigger lung capacity, larger hands and feet, relatively shorter legs to his trunk, and that these all give him advantages, so why can't everyone come up to that level? And there's a really interesting comment thread where someone said, you know, that's ridiculous. He became that way because he trained from a really young age, and if everybody had access to enhancements, it would totally invalidate things like intelligence and strength and prowess and athletic mastery. And I wonder, it seems like all these things that are so highly valued are based on unfairness, because people are naturally advantaged or disadvantaged in different ways, and it seems like people kind of prize those differences and think that somehow if it's naturally come by, it's okay, and that there's some kind of goodness to people having genetic or physical advantages over one another.
Right. Well, so if I can go back just a moment to what I was saying about people with access. So, like, I know a lot of people in the States like the story of, hopefully I'm not going to have to start prefacing everything with white people here in the United States of America. like the story of the privileged person who succeeded in a sport or something and would not have been able to had there not been some rules about what you couldn't do, such that we all know sports are rigged anyway, but if it was just out in the open that they were rigged, you know, then everything would be controlled by the people with the most money or the highest status or whatever it is. And so there's something to the idea I was born into this, and yet I overcame my difficulties and succeeded, as opposed to I used daddy's money to
but those stories are in the incredible minority, and they're a part of the folklore of America.
Mm-hmm. They're part of the folklore for a reason, though, is what I'm suggesting.
And one could also say that these people were born with a genetic predisposition to be highly
highly motivated, and they have, you know, a special type of intelligence and a special type of ability that allows them to make the kinds of decisions and maneuvers that allow them to succeed in that way. And it seems like at the heart of it, there's this idea that people are, that whatever nature confers on us is sort of like, it's almost like divine providence. Yeah, exactly. Like, don't mess with, it's like the whole doctrine of the elect in Calvinism. Like, there's the 144,000 who are saved, and then everybody else is screwed.
Yeah, well, I mean,
1,030.
and sports is like a tricky analogy to use, because part of the thing about sports and my perception is the romantic idea about sports is that it's a test of wills, and that's what you're watching. Is you're watching wills trying to outwill each other to have this thing or do this thing, and as far as predispositions that you're born with, like, you're like, well, you know, there's luck, and we can't do anything about luck, so we might as well just kind of not worry about it, and sweep that under the rug, because we can't regulate your luck, like, moment to moment or in your past entire life. But a lot of those reservations or things go away when you're talking about other things in general social fairness, because then a lot of the kind of callous social Darwinism things is like, well, if you don't have the money. If you don't have money, then it's because you're lazy.
Yeah.
This is America. If you work hard and you have the strength of will, then that immediately correlates with having money. It's your fault. And so I think, like, a lot of inequality or unfairness is justified by if you don't have money, then that's the justification for why you shouldn't have money.
I mean, and so much of... I did sociology as my major, and... they used to correlate everything back to your education level. So the idea was, well, if you can just put yourself through school, you know, sacrifice everything, and your parents sacrifice whatever they have to get you through school, you will do well. Well, how you do in school is based on who your parents are, basically. So that whole construction was blown away, that it's not how you do in school, it's how your parents raise you. And so it's just going back and back and back. And, so the idea of the assumption that if you don't have money, it's because you're lazy. It's similar in biology, where if you don't have the perfect body, it's because you don't work at it. When genetics just get in the way sometimes, actually a lot of the time, and I'm blessed in my genetics, but not everyone is. And so it's, and a lot of people don't know that. And they just assume that if you eat a lot of McDonald's, that's not the case. And so if you take a pill to make you more to the stereotypical ideal body, does that mean that you're cheating? Because you're not working at it? Because it's impossible for you to work towards it?
It's only cheating if everybody decides. Like, an example that comes to mind is, like, my mom told me about... being in, like, high school, right, when calculators first started, like, showing up, and, you know, and at first, those are not allowed at school because that's cheating. Those things are fucking, like, $1,000 or something. You can't, not everybody can have a calculator, so no calculator at school, that's cheating, even though they know you know how to do everything the calculator does. But, and then that, you know, over the course of a very short time, you know, with the speed with which that progressed, within a bit, like, just a shoot year, few short years, all of a sudden it's like mandatory. Like, by the time she got out of high school, it was pretty much mandatory to have a calculator just because the price had dropped. And
that's what I was saying, right?
Yeah, it's about,
like, it wasn't that the calculator gave people an advantage, it was that the calculator was expensive and only gave certain people an advantage.
Gave only certain people an advantage, yeah.
But that's getting away from what you were saying. I want to get back to what you were saying. I mean, what I'm saying is getting away from what you were saying.
Well, going to that, what if genetic modification becomes something that is widely available? Or if mechanical advances become widely available?
but it's still stigmatized because it's an alteration on the human body, because people don't feel like they're human anymore, whatever.
Those things will go hand in hand to it in a large degree.
Yeah, I think a lot, I think a whole lot more than people like to admit to themselves, a lot of morality and ideas of fairness are kind of retroactive stories made up to justify what you were going to do anyways, because you care.
Something I think this point's already been brought up, but just as things become ubiquitous in society, they'll become accepted. Like the idea of a lot of pharmaceuticals, like for ADD, ADHD, antidepressants, SSRIs, they do give you they give you an advantage that I think probably several decades ago would have been looked upon as unfair, like just suck it up and deal, basically. But now they're widely accepted, and it's not looked upon as giving people an unfair advantage, even though I think in a lot of cases drugs are prescribed without necessarily a very good reason, because people can pretty much get them on demand. And I think consumer culture is going to have a lot to do with whether stuff is accepted or not. Another article I read was about enhancements in baseball versus horse racing, and the argument was, well, in giving all these drugs to horses kills them really fast, but it makes for way more exciting baseball. And like, since they cracked down on doping, it's been really boring to watch. There aren't as many home runs. The fans want people to score crazy amounts of home runs, and I think people are going to want really exciting sports. They're going to want, as things become more mainstream and the younger generation sees what's becoming available, they're going to be like, cool, I want that. That's, why can't I have that? And I think that the people's consumer desires will drive a lot of things becoming acceptable. And I think it'll take a while because there's, you know, the yuck factor for people who aren't used to it. But I think it's, people become accustomed to things pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that, don't feel like pragmatically it's a good idea to just like go full force into those things? Because like my view of like society in general is that like the bigger rift between wealthy and not wealthy, the shittier things get for everybody in the long run if it's not a tractable situation. And I think a lot of people like absolute morality and shit like that aside, like in just a really pragmatic sense, I think a lot of people worry that like making these things freely available to wealthy people will just very quickly further widen the gap, especially if you have like germline genetic engineering, and then like you're like, well, I can ensure that, you know, at least for like five generations, my kids are, you know, not gonna have to pay for orthodontics, not gonna pay for glasses, not gonna, you know, pay for heart medicine when they turn 40, like all these things that stick around for many generations, because you had that money that one time, and then that reinforces itself because now you have all of these advantages, which allows you to have even more money for your next reincarnation or next generation or whatever. And so that's like definitely a bad thing, is the potential for widening the rift between rich and poor, which seems to already be happening. So how do you avert that?
Well, you need the early adopters to spend money on the stuff when it's new, and then that sort of drives the price down.
Yeah. Like ideally, it, you know, it trickles down like that. How it becomes cheap is because rich people spend money on it when it's expensive, and that gives other people get paid to figure out how to make it cheap.
Although I just want to interject the point that DIY culture is becoming huge. We go into, you know, Maker Faire and like all these things. There's so many websites out there, and, you know, Instructables, and there seems to definitely be a trend. I don't know how big it will get or how long it will last, but a trend towards sharing information and sharing resources and letting people experiment for themselves. And those things will give people, you know, hackers have always had a bad name for having the advantage, or, you know, for hacking and cheating is almost synonymous in many cases.
We're working pretty hard to criminalize that at this point.
Yes.
A lot of the do-it-yourself movement has really been hampered by MDMC, Digital Millennium Copyright Act, and digital rights management and stuff. So I think there's a pushback against those who are intelligent enough to break the rules.
But I agree. But there's also, I mean, I think there's also a pushback from the pushback.
Yeah.
You know, the Free Software Foundation.
Yeah, you've got Electronic Frontier Foundation.
There's a lot of, I mean, I can't, I don't have anything to compare it to in history.
I see it somewhat analogous with the civil rights movement, speech movements, but. When you initially put forward a struggle for rights, there's often a very large backlash against those individuals who are breaking the norms.
Sure.
And a big part of the wealth that I see of the software people and the hardware people and just the tech people in general is that it's not becoming wealth to them. They're giving back a lot of it. You know, Bill Gates is... sucky as a lot of the stuff he does is, he still gives back a huge amount of what he gets. And whether that's for tax reasons or whatever, he's still doing it. And when there was the, just, a lot of it's happening in basements and garages, which I like about the DIY movement, that a lot of people are, a lot of the stuff that we see is coming not from really fancy research labs that's being funded by corporations. Some of it is. But, so you have that side of the DIY, and then you also have the people who are getting all this money, at least as far as I've been able to tell, are not handling it in the same way. And so I think it might not be closing the gap, but it's not widening it at quite the rate that it would be otherwise.
I think there's a lot of shift happening right now from competition to cooperation. And I think that as that shift happens, there may be opportunity to embrace advantages that in a competitive environment would have been considered cheating, but in a cooperative environment are tolerated because there's a mutual gain.
Yeah.
I think kind of analogously like the open source movement, but in a broader sense than software, which kind of encompasses the DIY movement and stuff and things about, you know, information should always be free, you know, especially when once you've gotten the ball rolling, then you know, you come up with this thing or this idea, this process or whatever. And you know full well that you're standing on the shoulders of like all these other people, and then so naturally you just release it back into that. And the awesome thing that is kind of counterintuitive in like the old model is that that ends up being better for everybody. When everybody just gives away everything, then everybody wins. God. And and people, it's starting to come around to that very slowly, which is like very counter to like the typical kind of capitalist ideology. But when you're talking about information, which is not like, you can't run out of it, like when you give somebody else information, you don't lose anything, which is why that works. And as information becomes like more important than the material, because you can get the material if you know the right information and how to use that, and how to use that to get money or food or water, whatever, then that's a way to... Yeah, that direction is a way to circumvent that caveat of, you know, widening the class rift thing.